Yes, I definitely you would agree and concur that it was a pretty amazing bringing together of different people and different creations, and with very much a conceptual environmental theme. Dark ecosystems, I liked how it was, different artists took different manifestations of it. So, Salome, I really appreciate you taking your time out to share with us today. And could you tell listeners how they can, you have a podcast, of course, for Spanish speakers, but could you tell our listeners how they could follow your work, get in touch with you, your Instagram, et cetera?
Okay, you can follow me on Instagram. You can find me as Salomé Restrepo point A. Is SALOMERESTREPO point A. And I also have a podcast that is called Culture on Road, that is Cultura en Ruta in Español. And in my Instagram, you can find my portfolio, my web page, and you can see my work and my process. And I also post like a lot of things of my research. So if you want to follow me, all my information is there. So thank you so much, Jack, for inviting me to this important space. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Hey, listeners, to check out the extended recording of this show or to explore our other shows, visit our website,
This
ecojusticeradio.org.
is KBOO Portland.
KBOOs, loud and proud. Become a member during our KBOOs Out Loud fall membership drive, taking place now through September 20th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots, independent, radically made, community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give and help us reach our $45,000 goal. Thank you.
Hey everyone, Joseph here, one of the co-hosts of Life Stamp Stories from Here and There. I'm here to remind you about our KBOO Out Loud fall membership drive and just the importance of community media when we need it the most. Help us reach our goal of $45,000 before September 20th and help amplify local voices. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. For years, KBOO has received about 10% of its funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB. Recently, Congress voted to rescind over $1 billion in funding for CPB grants, and shortly after that, we learned that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting will shut down at the end of the year. This means KBOO has about $110,000 it relied on that it won't get in 2026. But we do know that we can rely on you. Our loyal listeners and supporters like you make KBOO possible. Please give at kboo.fm/donate today. Hi, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and this is Life Stamps, stories from here and there. I'm Joseph.
I am Tyson.
Join us every other Thursday at 10 a.m. as we discuss exciting destinations around the world. They're not always from personal experience, but never without cultural awareness and a passion for travel. This is Joseph, and I'm here with Tyson. Hey, Tyson.
How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, doing well. Thank you very much. The weather's starting to cool down in Portland, so, this is supposed to be September, right?
It is September.
It is September, yeah.
I'm glad you know your sense of time. And well, summer's, like, ended, even though it doesn't feel like it.
I know. Yeah, so, feeling good. Feeling good outside. Yeah, so I think today I heard that maybe we are going to be talking about Greece.
Yeah, I found something interesting.
Mm.
I don't know about you, but when I think of boats, I think of cruises, and I think of not being able to leave the boat, and I think of spending way too much money to be stuck on an all-inclusive on a cruise ship.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but when I think of boats, I think of little rafts that are tied together, like with driftwood and reeds, being stranded out on the ocean because you crash landed a plane onto an island. That's what I think about boats.
I'm old Greg. there's a sketch.
I haven't heard that in so long.
Oh, you know it.
I know it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you know the reference.
Yeah.
We're referencing some sketch comedy from the Mighty Bush, British comedy with this guy who lives underwater in a bog called Old Greg.
Yeah.
But Greek ferries are not a thatched raft.
Oh, we're talking about ferries in Greece?
We're talking about ferries in Greece.
Okay.
And they're not
cruises.
And they're not, you know, Norwegian cruise lines either.
Uh-huh.
They're somewhere in the middle.
Mm.
So let's just say you generally, there are overnight ferries that you can take within Greece.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of them, because Greece isn't like, if you're just staying within Greece,
mm-hmm.
you can go international and go to Italy, and that's where you'll have more like an overnight ferry or whatever
mm-hmm.
in terms of Greek ferries if you one was traveling within Greece. But for the most part, these would be like half-day trips and type of stuff. So you're not booking a bed. And they're actually quite affordable. And that's what I think makes the idea of ferry hopping and island hopping while doing a Greek vacation quite intriguing, and you don't really have to have like a massive travel budget to do it.
Well, I have a question.
What is that question?
Are there bathrooms on the ferries?
I think so. Yeah.
I've
taken them in Croatia before and there were mm-hmm. bathrooms. I've never taken
Good
Greek
to know.
Ferries.
Yeah.
So if they're like the Croatian ferries,
then they have a bathroom.
Not just Old Greg.
They probably have more than one bathroom, I'm guessing.
I think you had like the bottom deck.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think you may have something outside on
so
the top
like
deck.
So like the bottom deck and then you have the poop deck?
I think so. You know, you've ridden the ferries in Seattle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't there one outside on the top deck as well, or is that...
No, it's a poop deck.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They have just like a little elevated deck and people are doing their business up there.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting citations or anything?
Oh, no. Because on the ferry, it's okay.
I see.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's Seattle.
Yeah.
Come on.
All right. Moving on.
Greek ferries that have bathrooms.
That is,
so when you say relatively affordable...
Since you're mostly concerned about the bathroom on the boat...
Yeah, how much is it?
And I don't have that information for you. I'm going to give you some various websites to check out to answer your question.
Okay.
Also to our listeners, you probably would like to know itineraries and routes and prices,
mm-hmm.
and all these are good resources. But in Joseph's case, you know, just whether or not there is a loo on a Greek ferry.
It's important.
And you
have
will
to know.
And you will have ferriesingreece.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's one resource. Ferryhopper.com. go/ferry.com.
Mm-hmm.
Ferryscanner.com,
mm-hmm.
which is very similar to like Skyscanner, which you may know for looking for cheap flights.
So you can use it to look for cheap ferries?
Yeah, ferry scanner. And not all these are specific to Greece, but some of them are specifically just for national ferries within Greece.
I see.
And something I like, which is called the Omio application. It's
mm-hmm.
an app for your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And on here, you can actually book flights, ferries, buses, and trains. And it covers all of Europe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the Omio app is actually really, really nice. And
nice.
Then another one is seajets.com
mm-hmm.
and greekferries.gr.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's lots of resources.
Yeah. So a lot of these are, you know, different places where you can check out your ferry timetables and try to put an itinerary together for your favorite Greek islands if one was to travel through Greece.
So for someone new to island hopping, what are some key things to consider when planning a ferry trip?
Well, you want to consider high season because that's where tickets will, like, you know, be bought up much quicker. So,
highs in prices.
No, it's
not because people are like, you know.
No, well, that too.
High season.
When you have more people, you have more of everything, right?
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, but that also means you probably aren't going to get a ticket by just going to the ferry terminal and being like, hey.
Well, but you want a ticket to ride the ferry, right? Don't you have to buy the ticket?
I'm trying to tell you.
Oh, do you mean like citation?
If you was in Greece through the months of June through September, the high season, summer months.
Okay.
And you were like, oh, I want to go to Crete today because I've heard Crete's a beautiful Greek island.
Yeah.
And you walk to the ferry station and they tell you they have no more tickets available for the day. That's your fault. Because it's high season. You should be looking ahead of time to be getting your tickets.
So that's when you go light up in front of a police officer so he can give you a ticket.
Oh, okay. Perhaps.
Yeah. Right? That's the way around it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why you're so into getting thrown in Greek jail today, but, you know.
No, I'm not. I'm just trying to
write. Have you ever noticed the flag? It kind of looks like a jail. The Greek flag. It's like.
I haven't really noticed that, no.
It's blue and white cross, blue and white stripes. Gels.
I guess so. But a lot of flags are striped, right?
If you were in jail and you were my prisoner, I would say no souvlaki for you.
No souvlaki?
Yeah.
It kind of, I mean, I guess like those like old school jail uniforms.
Yeah.
Like the black and white ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But blue and white with a cross. Yeah. But I think it's kind of interesting in a way too, because the flag to me sort of symbolizes, you know, Greece as a whole. You know, it's a very old world Orthodox, you know, kind of land and stuff. And the blue and the white just symbolizes the ocean and the connectivity of it all.
It is an interesting flag because of the way they use color, that like the cross is just an inverted, it's like you have the white stripe but then it gets inverted to blue to make the shape of the cross.
Right.
So there's like a blue stripe that's going through and then it like gets inverted to white and that's like the beginning of the cross.
Right. Right.
Yeah, interesting.
And so and also another tip here would be, you know, generally you'd probably want at least a couple nights on an island, even if you're staying on a small island. So it's kind of saying by rule of thumb, if you're only going for a week, only assume you're going to do about two or three islands. And if it was like 2 weeks, then you could potentially do like 3 to 5 islands or something like that. I'm putting together an itinerary that we'll talk about later in the show today. That's going to be a 2-week itinerary that will include 4 islands.
So how do you choose which islands to visit? Like what's your like method of being like, oh well, I think these islands are good?
I just thought they were good.
Oh yeah. You're just like, oh, that looks interesting.
Yeah.
Like what interested you about the islands that you chose? Or am I getting ahead of myself?
No, you're not. I guess I've never been to Greece. So if you ask me personally why okay. So full disclosure, we're going to talk about the Cyclades. It's an archipelago of many archipelagos within Greece. I chose this because, I was thinking from if it were me, I wouldn't want to spend a long time out at sea after leaving Athens. So I was looking for an itinerary that would pop me off to my first starter island, not being too far from Athens port.
Gotcha.
If you will. Now, that may not be of everyone's by design. You know, some people are like, okay, I'm in the capital of this country, but I'm like ready. Like Spain would be, for example, if you were in Valencia or you were in Barcelona, some people will sail all the way to the Canaries because they're really set on something specific that would be cultural and historic with the Canaries. I liked the 4 islands I found that were relatively close to Greece within the Cyclades, so I chose them. Now, but that doesn't mean that any of the 4 islands I chose are better or worse than other Greek islands. They just have their own different, distinct, unique charm, and it was one of the ones that seemed most interesting to me within a 2-week excursion. So I chose them, and I'll get back to why later on that, but that's kind of the thing. Here's some other things to think about. So within Greece, the slower ferries cost less, and the fast ferries obviously cost more because they get you there quicker. But here's the other caveat. If you're somebody who's renting a car or renting like a bike, a motorbike or something, they don't allow them on the fast ferries. But on the other hand, so you'll get the cheaper ferry ticket and you'll have the freedom to move around once you get onto one island to the next.
I see.
So that's...
So fast ferries don't allow vehicles.
No, they do not.
It's only foot traffic.
And I think it's because of weight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For the boat.
Yeah.
And limiting the amount of passengers that they'll take on the faster mm-hmm. ferries mm-hmm. so they can just really jet through the Aegean Sea or, you know, mm-hmm. Other bodies of water that right. encompass around Greece. Mm-hmm. It's generally open seating, so you want to get at least to the ferry terminal about 30 minutes before boarding.
Okay.
So you're not the last of the queue.
So no reserved seats, especially if you're traveling in a group.
Yeah, especially if you're traveling in a group or you know you want to sit. Because right. I think...
Oh, so there's only limits, so they might like not have enough seats for everybody?
It could be similar to like in Seattle, you know, when you get on those ferries and then all the seats are taken up and then you got to kind of ride the deck.
Oh.
Or something like this, you know. I'm not sure what their capacity is, but mm-hmm. I have a feeling that they'll probably sell more tickets than seats.
I see.
And stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Another thing is like if you buy your round trip ticket, in more cases than not, your round trip is probably going to be Athens, mm-hmm. assuming with Greece.
Yeah.
Then it's best to either have a later flight in the day, you know, for your return out of Athens, mm-hmm. or to fly back from your final island back to Athens.
Okay.
Just so you don't fall into permanent weather.
Yeah.
And the boat get stuck at sea and you don't get back to Athens in time to make your return flight. It has happened with tourists because they don't think about weather conditions when it comes to these boats.
Oh, I see.
And so
it's possible that the you could get inclement weather.
You could get inclement weather and that would delay your ferry. So it's more advised that your final island should have an airport that can fly you back to Athens mm-hmm. as a safety precaution. You buy that domestic ticket to get back to Athens to get your final flight home.
Gotcha. Okay, that's good to know.
And it's not that bad. I mean, I was looking at certain ferry packages that come with these ferries, and that means that they're going to it will include some kind of bread and breakfast or like backpacker hostel along with a couple excursions on your target island or whatever mm-hmm. and it says that can run roughly about 150 euros per day. So your ferry ticket, let's say for example it's Santorini, you mm-hmm. know, and then it's 3 days in Santorini, that could be 450 euros for 3 days, but that'll include like the ticket from Athens to Santorini, all the excursions and your accommodation on the island.
Oh, okay. So it's a tour.
And it's somewhat of a tour. Yeah. And so if you do choose that option through any of the resources that I mm-hmm. had mentioned earlier, I'll put those in the show notes this week as always, that you can, you know, kind of cut down your expenses instead of buying out everything separately as well. You
so
know.
450 euros for 3 days, you said? It's like 150 euros a day.
Roughly 150 euros per day. Yeah.
I guess if you're like taking into an account, like, you know, you're doing all these excursions, it's also paying for accommodation. And if you're going to stay in a hotel could definitely cost just, you know, 100 to 150 euros a day.
Right.
But that you're saying this is like a hostel accommodation. Like this is more like for like a backpacker type.
I'm not sure what it really looks like in these packages and stuff. All I know is like you can get it down to 150 euro a day for having various excursions and accommodations and your ferry ticket and stuff, you know. So that's basically saying it's doable on a budget, you know, this island hopping ferry hopping thing within Greece and stuff. And it's not that expensive of a country really when you get out of Athens and like through some of the less like, you know, touristy parts of the country. Generally, it's saying dinners at nice restaurants for two could cost 40 euros.
Oh, okay.
That means street food is probably like 5 or 6 euros. You know what I mean? Because if you're talking about a really fancy dinner, only being 20.
Yeah, right.
So
yeah, it's pretty cheap.
So it's still fairly affordable to go to Greece, really, you know?
Yeah.
It's just everybody thinks of quintessential Santorini being a place where you just, you know, relax and do it like the nines. But, you know, you have...
There's lots of options, you're saying, and it can be pretty affordable.
Yeah, there's lots of options and stuff. And, you know, I think you're asking me something.
Yeah, you saw the little twinkle in my eye. Twinkle, little archipelago.
Oh.
Now I wonder what you are up above the sea so high.
Okay.
Like an island in the sea.
Mm-hmm.
But from the perception of a fish, it's like an island floating in the sky.
What is an archipelago, right? Joseph?
An archipelago is a group of islands in the sea.
Okay.
That's the loose definition. Right. I think they have to be connected in some way. Like, they're like kind of part of like a land map. It's like a, because there's like an archipelago, but there's also like...
it's like a shared ecosystem, right?
There's one where it's like a ring.
Right.
I forgot what that's called. But anyway, yes. So I heard that Greece has a lot of archipelagos. Do you know how many?
Wow, man. Is Harvey, is he on vacation? Is he around? I think I see him. Oh, Harvey. Yeah, there he is.
He's waking up.
All right, Harvey. I'm going to, you know, wake you up from another nap because I think Harvey probably knows the answer to this question.
He doesn't look too happy, though.
When it's time for me to unwind my circuits and get off information, searching like I am unfortunately doing right now for you guys, I go to Greece, which is a great place for robots and people when they are not asking for boring calculations. So let's talk about some of the archipelagos here. Greece has several archipelagos, each with its own unique character. Let's start with the Ionian Islands, located off the west coast of Greece. These islands are known for their lush green landscapes and beautiful beaches. The Cyclades, situated in the central Aegean, are famous for their whitewashed houses and blue-domed churches. Islands like Mykonos and Santorini are popular destinations in this group. The Dodecanese Islands are located off the coast of Turkey and boast a rich history, with ancient ruins and medieval castles. Rhodes and Kos are two of the most well-known islands in this group. The North Aegean Islands, which include Lesbos and Chios, offer a mix of stunning natural beauty and cultural heritage. These islands are often less crowded than some of the more popular destinations in Greece. Lastly, the Saronic Islands, located near Athens, are a convenient getaway for those looking to explore the Peloponnese region. Aegina and Poros are two popular islands in this group, known for their beautiful beaches and charming towns. Next time you see me, I might be on one of these islands drinking electric ouzo.
Thank you, Harvey. He didn't say a number, but I counted 6 archipelagos.
There's more than that. Honestly, I don't know. And you were talking about, like, we're all picking islands or something. That's mm-hmm. one avenue to start researching is these archipelagos within Greece,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that can kind of help you. I mm-hmm. can reiterate a few facts that Harvey is kind of talking about. The Dodecanese Islands,
mm-hmm.
those are the ones that are closest to Turkey.
Oh, yeah.
So quite possibly you could equally take ferries from Istanbul to that chain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have more information about what they're more known for.
Mm-hmm.
The Cyclades or the Cyclades, which I will talk about, mm-hmm. are considered some of the most beautiful in the world.
Yeah.
And not too far from Athens. So
right. Those are the same, like, the, that's where, like, the those are the popular ones. I like the Cyclades is, like, Santorini, Mykonos. Like,
yeah.
I feel like those are kind of, like, more...
Well, I think the Ionians are quite popular too because I think that includes like the former empire of the Crete and the Minoan people and stuff that were like further south Greece and stuff like this as well. So history, people that are really interested in ancient Greek history, I think you actually get more of that ancient Greek history in the Ionian Islands or the south ones. There's also the Sporades, which literally means scattered. So they're kind of like the sporadic archipelago away from the Cyclades. West of mainland Greece is the Ionian archipelago. The Saronics are within the Saronic Gulf. So maybe there's a little bit of a different like history there with these islands and the type of industries that people do because, you know, Gulf waters are different than the sea waters in terms of agriculture.
right,
and fishing industries and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then Aegean refers to all islands in the Aegean Sea, pretty much. So if somebody says, "Oh yeah, Aegean islands," they're talking about multiple archipelagos, honestly, because it's the whole Aegean Sea.
Mm.
And then a small mini chain within the Cyclades, which is kind of interesting, is called the Coophonesia.
Mm. Coophonesia
micro islands.
Okay.
And this is important because when I talk about excursions from a couple of our main islands,
mm-hmm,
in the Cyclades today, there are some of these excursions will take you to a couple of the micro islands, which would technically, fun fact, would be Coophonesia.
Mm.
You know, so yeah, so
gotcha.
I'll dive into our Cyclades itinerary.
Yeah, Cyclades, yeah. And so what makes the Cyclades stand out from other Greek islands?
Well, it's nicknamed, this itinerary, the Blue Fantastic Four. There's more than four islands in the mm-hmm Cyclades, but this one will start you off in Mykonos,
mm-hmm,
and then go to Paros,
mm-hmm,
and then go to Santorini,
mm-hmm,
and then go to Naxos.
Okay.
So
that's the order that you would travel to.
That's the order you'll travel, okay, through. Mm-hmm. And then from Naxos, like I mentioned before, there is an airport there, a regional airport.
Mm-hmm.
So you can book your ticket back to Athens if you don't want to take the ferry from Naxos back, gotcha, to Athens.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So in length of time, I've got this kind of divided up between fast ferry and slow ferry.
Mm-hmm.
So your first day will be the longest on the boat, especially mm-hmm if you're doing the shoestring budget approach.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And that's going from Athens to Mykonos.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 2.5 by fast ferry and 5 hours by slow.
Athens to Mykonos. Okay.
Yeah. And then after you leave Mykonos, going from Mykonos to Paros,
mm-hmm,
it's 1 by fast or 1.5 by slow.
Okay. Not too much of a difference.
Not too much, because mm-hmm they're closer together.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go from Paros to Santorini, that's 2 by fast and 3 by slow.
Okay.
And when you go from Santorini to Naxos, that's 1.5 by fast, 3 by slow.
Gotcha.
So it's really like basically kind of double the time in almost all cases.
Mm.
You know, where you take the slow ferry or the fast ferry. And like I mentioned before, if you're going to have a motorbike or a car, mm-hmm, you kind of have to take the slow ferry.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. So would you recommend traveling with a vehicle?
It really just depends on how attracted you are to the brochures and mm-hmm the pictures of the landscape,
mm-hmm,
and how well equipped the local bus is per each island that you're going to for that specific reason.
Yeah.
You may just be happy just enjoying the beautiful beaches and the little village
mm-hmm
of each island that you go to, and then, you know, just doing some of the excursions via boat.
Yeah,
it's really just depends on you, your traveler self,
mm-hmm,
what you're looking to do and stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then so when we start this off, and the reason why I think this is kind of a good tour, because if you're thinking of islands in terms of like being kind of like checked away from society and being kind of connected to society,
mm-hmm,
Mykonos is definitely fairly connected, and it is kind of a party city,
mm-hmm,
Mykonos town.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Santorini, you know, is also very well connected with society. And restaurants and,
right,
and bars. And
Santorini is kind of the bigger one, right?
And tavernas, yeah, mm-hmm, and stuff. Where Paros and Naxos are kind of going to be your detachments in the beginning.
Mm.
So if you look at it like Athens, slowing down but still partying when you go to Mykonos, then really relaxing, enjoying time in Paros,
mm-hmm,
and then kind of, you know, ramping things back up a little bit, doing some shopping and fine eating and wonderful sightseeing when you're in Santorini, mm-hmm, and then really just relaxing and ending your holiday in Naxos,
mm-hmm,
before you fly back or potentially take your gamble with the boat to come back to Athens.
I see.
You know, so that's kind of the reasoning behind my itinerary in a lot of ways. It's just the way it's broken up.
Yeah, okay.
And stuff as well.
I see.
So starting in Mykonos, there's Mykonos town,
mm-hmm,
which is known for its like little churches and narrow streets, mm-hmm, filled with cafes, art galleries, bars, and tavernas. So it does have a good like nightlife presence. It's not like some place that shuts down after the sun goes down.
Just going to rewind. What time of year would you if you were to make this trip, what time of year would you go?
I'd be, we're talking about it now, and I think now's a good time. I think shoulder season really is best, I would say, just so like for prices and not being so competitive like it is in the peak of summer.
Yeah.
So I would be looking at probably like April till early June or September and October.
Okay.
You know, and of course, staying up to date with the weather patterns and everything.
Yeah.
You are, you know, still going to want to pack some rain gear and stuff just for the occasional like spring storm or autumn, you know.
Gotcha.
Strange weather that could happen and stuff. But I think being where the weather's still pretty good, but not in the peak of summer.
Yeah.
Is ideal for your wallet.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So, I mean, that pretty much goes with like all these places, even the furthest north islands and stuff from Greece, you know, because it still doesn't span a lot of latitude. So, yeah.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so then you, also then it's got like a really charming waterfront with like local fish markets and restaurants, and then there's clubs and there's like nightlife there, like down in the waterfront area of Mykonos town and stuff, you know. So this will be just kind of like a mini Athens in a way, maybe on an island, you know. It's like still very has a lot of services and everything. And then if you go in the rural Mykonos, like for example on a motorbike or something, you get these scattered little villages with goats and those classic white windmills you see on postcards of like Santorini, but actually in the countryside.
Okay.
And stuff like that. And so you could probably talk with like local farmers and learn different things there.
Okay.
A day trip that would be included in one of those like packages would be a trip to Delos, which is an archaeological museum. And it is believed that Apollo and Artemis were born there. So that's a little, you know, mythology fact about Mykonos.
Okay.
You know, so and so that's definitely worth doing that. And actually, Delos is not Mykonos. Delos is the micro island. So that's why it's an excursion, you know.
Oh, okay.
It's not like you just be in Mykonos and you walk to this archaeology museum.
So you have to take a little excursion.
You have to take a smaller little, like probably pontoon boat or something from Mykonos to get to Delos.
I see.
Yeah.
Cool. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Can you see, is there like a little temple that like for Apollo?
I think there is. There's probably like a little UNESCO heritage archaeological construction.
Yeah.
It's the best word I can think of. Monument. Right. Monument. Mm-hmm. Monument that probably is honoring the birth of both Artemis and Apollo on that little island. And then it's includes like a tour to the archaeology museum on that little island and stuff. So that's kind of like your day trip that you can do from that, and that's just a small little bit because all these islands, it's going to go without saying, you're going to have crystal clear blue waters, beautiful rock beaches, places to swim and dive and cool off. You have all that on every island that I'm going to talk about. It's Greece.
Okay. Yeah.
So that doesn't need to be included.
So it kind of goes without saying.
It kind of goes without saying.
Like all of that.
Yeah. So I know I made 3 days seem really short, and I'm going to do that with each of these because we don't have a lot of time to go into super detail about each of the four. But just assume like when you get to Mykonos, the nightlife is going to be quite good and you should be able to have some really good like local vendors and street food. And it's just not because some of these other places they'll literally be sleepy at like, you know, 7 8 p.m. or whatever, you know.
Gotcha. Yeah,
they're not going to be really even
so you're saying like Mykonos is a little bit better for that
nightlife
and stuff.
Mykonos will you'll be able to do a lot of that partying and stuff and hang out and do all that stuff. But then you'll leave and Mykonos, and you'll be on your way to Paros.
Okay.
And from Paros, you can do another day trip boat tour to the Blue Lagoon with two different secret beaches and little like inlet coves. And I think the boat will take you through like those water coves, kind of like when you see those water excursions in Thailand and type of stuff. You know, so they'll take you through some of that stuff. And that's like a half day tour. And then you'll go by three more little islands. I didn't get the names of them, but you know, they'll be part of that Colophonesia micro archipelago
within
the Cyclades. Yeah,
gotcha.
It's recommended when you're in Paros to relax and spend some time at Kolymbithiris Beach. And that's a crystal clear waters and like unique rock formations. So this is more of a postcard moment, you know. It's because, like I said, there's so many beaches, but this is one that you would go to, kind of like Canyon Beach here in Oregon. Mm-hmm. You've got the iconic rocks.
Oh, okay, okay.
So that's unique about that beach. Mm-hmm. So you'll make your way there when you're on Pyros. Mm-hmm. And then the main kind of village town is Nausa Village. Mm-hmm. And they've got classic whitewash houses and stone narrow streets, tavernas, cafes, and mm-hmm. shops. It's just, I think a lot of these people are going to try to shut down shops about, you know, 5, 6, 7 p.m. or whatever. So your Iranians are going to be a little more about
okay.
probably so having it's, barbecues.
Are you thinking
or
it's
something.
Not like a, not a late night kind of
no,
culture?
No, not once you get to Paros. Okay. Yeah, no, Paros is going to be a lot more for the natural beauty of things.
Gotcha.
And just the small village, Greek island village life.
Gotcha.
As you will, you mm-hmm. know, and just some of the excursions you'll do from there, from the boats
totally.
And stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you'll have a good 2-3 relaxing days there, depending on how many days you ferry hop for. Mm-hmm. And then you make your way onto the classic Santorini after Paros. So, you know, Santorini is kind of like the California of Greek islands. Mm-hmm. You've got archaeology to check out. So there's Akrotiri, which is a preserved Minoan Bronze Age settlement. Mm-hmm. So this will be more kind of like some things that you could see around Athens on Santorini, but mm-hmm. in island form in a way, you know. It's just going to be just miniaturized mm-hmm. in a sense. So you'll get a lot of classic Greek architecture sites to see on Santorini.
Okay.
Then you can also do the Fira to Oia hike. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you know this, but Santorini actually has a non-dormant volcano that exploded many, many millennia ago. Mm. Similar to like the famous story of Pompeii that we all know with Italy.
Right.
There's the, you know, the volcano in Santorini. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so that's for the panoramic volcanic rim hike. You can get up there and see the 360-degree view of all of Santorini once you hike up there to the volcano rim.
Is it pretty easy to find a trail to hike up to the Fira de Oia?
I think finding the trail is quite easy because mm-hmm. I'm sure there's like brochures probably on the ferries themselves. Mm-hmm. And definitely when you get to Santorini, there's brochures to tell you how to do it and stuff, you know. So I think you just plan to make it happen. Mm-hmm. In some cases, maybe you want to do it as a guided hike, you know, just depending on what your thing is and stuff.
Yeah.
There's hot springs up there too, you know, that are connected to the thermal hotbeds mm-hmm. of the volcano and stuff too. So in some cases, people like to kind of go there a little bit later in the day so they can be up there for a sunset in a hot spring mm-hmm. overlooking, you know, a Greek island or something
gotcha.
Of this nature.
Yeah.
So it's really it's really quite cool. And then if you like to, because of the volcanic nature of Santorini, there are places where there are the black sand beaches mm-hmm. that have the volcanic sand. And these beaches would be Perisa, mm-hmm. Perivolos, and Red Beach.
Mm.
So both of them, I guess red is, it was still volcanic sand, but it's probably a little more red in the tint than just your classic black sand beach.
Gotcha.
And then some other notable mentions while in Santorini is the, there's a vineyard somewhere up near the volcano as well that's called Santo Volcanic Wines.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go there, explore the vineyard, taste and see how the volcanic soil alters the flavor of the grape.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes things.
Mm.
There's cable car rides to go up to the mountain and stuff. And there are local like Greek cooking classes that can be had as like, you know, some other sustainable travel activities within Santorini. So mm-hmm. Santorini is kind of like, you know, like I said, it's kind of like the California of Greek islands because it's got all these little different elements of things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Santorini, you know, and the restaurants are some of the best in the country for a reason.
Yeah, cool. So Santorini seems like it's sort of like the climax of the trip, you know. It's like you're going to do Mykonos, which is like, you know, kind of fun and you know, a little bit active, and then you go to Paros, right?
Yeah.
And that's a little bit more sleepy. And then Santorini is really like the big, like there's lots of, you know, there's multiple villages and beaches and lots of like things to do, restaurants.
I would
and,
say
you
know, so.
And then the last island is going to be, I'm guessing, also a smaller one.
Yeah. And Naxos is a bit smaller too. But Naxos is also like really cool in terms of like unique natural beauty.
Mm-hmm.
Comparatively to Paros, where Paros is a little more about getting like kind of island farm life experiences and then hanging around the town and just kind of learning like some of the culture within Paros, you know. Paros is really good in this itinerary because it gives you the chance to get on that little boat and take you through the coves and get you onto some like smaller little secluded beaches and just kind of get your bearings, no pun intended,
right,
out in the waters of like where you really are at in the world, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And how it connects within the archipelago of being in the Cyclades.
I just, hold on, I just realized we haven't done a station ID yet, so I'm just gonna stop you there and
all right.
Let everyone know that you're listening to 90.7 FM Portland. That's KBOO 90.7 FM Portland. And this is Life Stamp, Stories from Here and There. I'm Joseph, here with Tyson, and we are talking about Greece, specifically the Cyclades Archipelago, including islands like Mykonos, Santorini, Paros, and the last one we're talking about is Naxos.
Naxos, yeah. We're going to finish off the itinerary. And, all right.
Also, just want to just do a quick time check. Have about like 15-ish minutes left. So maybe we want to go into trivia after Naxos?
Yeah, I mean, that's all I have to talk about anyway. So
cool.
I'll give you the quick rundown. This is how you're ending your itinerary and, you know, getting through the islands. You got the Temple of Apollo.
Yeah.
On Naxos. So
nice.
Must see, you know.
Oh, so the Apollo Temple is on Naxos, not on Paros. But he was born on Paros.
He wasn't born on Paros. He was born on the little island of Delos.
Right. Okay.
According to myth.
But Naxos has a temple.
Yep.
Okay.
A temple honoring Apollo offers great sunsets and views. It's a little bit high up on the island of Naxos.
Okay.
The town itself has a bustling market and Venetian like castle, so there's a castle to explore. The local markets are supposed to be quite good here, so this is a good place to end to get your Greek souvenirs and stuff on Naxos. You have Mount Zar, which is actually the highest mountain in the whole Cyclades region. So it's a good hike with cedar forests and stuff going up to the top of the summit. And the Liko Chaki, which is like a mountain town with a distillery. So I think they distill ouzo up there. At the Liko Chaki is the name of the mountain village where the distillery is and stuff up on Mount Zas.
Okay.
And then within up on the mountain, there's also the Za Cave. So there's a little bit of cave exploring to do on highest mountain in the Cyclades and stuff to explore that. And that's kind of also believed. Wait, I forgot to say it.
Wait,
that
wait for it.
The Za Cave
is
believed to be the birthplace of Zeus Almighty.
Whoa. So we have two birthplaces of gods on this trip.
But Zeus is really like the god of gods. So,
well, I know. Like Zeus is the big one.
And if you take a shot of ouzo and go through that cave and be like, oh, this is where Zeus was born, you're going to come out of there feeling pretty great.
Well, that's where Harvey will find his electric ouzo.
I think so.
Yeah, because Zeus likes to play with lightning.
Yeah, well, I really hope he does. He's been getting a little salty recently. You know, I think it's about time for him to get out of Portland and get on a boat. You know,
he needs to chill. He needs to just like chill out for a little bit.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I'm going to quiz your brain, Joseph, see how well you're listening here soon. So let's make our cut to trivia and comments.
I'm feeling pretty good about this one.
Okay, now let's move on to trivia and comments. Trivia time. Trivia time, hip, hip, hooray. Listener comments as well, handled the Life Stamps way. Today and every day.
All right, we are into trivia hour, the best hour, the time where Joseph proves to me how smart he is. We got seven questions today, Joseph.
All right, my goal is to answer four out of seven correctly.
Let's see how well you do.
Yep, let's see.
Of the four islands mentioned in this itinerary, which island has the best nightlife?
Ooh. I'm going to say Santorini.
Seriously?
Well, I mean, you said Mykonos has a good nightlife, but Santorini is a bigger island. It has more going on.
I think it's Mykonos.
I contest that.
All right, well, this is debatable, but I don't think it's a fact.
So you're saying Mykonos has a better nightlife?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, subjective.
Sorry.
I'm going to give myself a point. Okay. Got that one right.
Well, here's something. Many websites offer information on ferry timetables, but what is a good phone application?
For finding ferries?
Yes.
Rio to Rome.
Nope. It's not the one I talked about.
Yeah, but that's a good one.
It might
you
be
asked me what a good phone application is.
Fine, I'll give you a point.
Okay, sorry. What's the one that you said?
It doesn't prove you're listening. You should really put it on your phone, by the way. It's called Omio.
Omio.
Yeah, okay. The Omio app.
How do you spell it?
O-M-I-O.
O-M-I-O?
Yeah, you'll thank me later.
Okay. Your Omio.
Yeah.
For finding ferries.
Name at least three Greek archipelagos.
I'm just chatting with Harvey on the side here.
Sure.
About Mykonos or Santorini.
I gave him Azuzo, so he's not going to help you.
Well, I just want to tell you, like, I just want to acknowledge that Mykonos is right.
Thank you.
Mykonos wins because it has a world-renowned party scene, beach clubs, all-day beach to night clubbing vibe. So basically, Mykonos is all about clubbing.
Told you.
Okay, all right. Three.
But I'll give you Rome to Rio, so you're still 1-1.
I don't know if I caught that one.
Kind of proved you weren't listening.
So we were doing the Cyclades.
Sure.
So that's one archipelago.
Yep.
Then there's the Ionian Islands.
Okay.
And the Sporades.
Pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. You named three.
Uh-huh.
Well done. 2-1. Lesser known to Santorini, what is unique to this island in terms of experiences?
What is unique to this island?
That people don't always like, hey, I'm going to Santorini, and people are like, oh, yeah, cool.
As in like, okay, I'm going to do this. It's not what people typically think.
Yeah.
Is it like hiking up to the mountain?
You're lukewarm.
And watching the sunset?
They're lukewarm. I'm thinking about something specific.
Hiking up to the island, looking into the volcano, or hiking up to the mountain.
Ding ding! You said the word
the volcano.
Volcano. Yeah, the volcano. The volcanic activities.
Volcanic activities.
Yeah.
Which people don't typically think about for Santorini.
No, because I don't really hear people talking about Santorini in the same way they talk about the Big Island of Hawaii or anything of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so it's kind of a fun fact.
Mm-hmm.
I think you are. I think you've got two right. I don't know. I'm not keeping score now.
I'm at three, yeah. Right?
Which island has the Za Cave, believed to be the birthplace of Zeus?
Zeus.
Yeah, I know.
Not Apollo, right? Naxos.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's Naxos.
Woo-hoo.
From which island can you do a Blue Lagoon boat tour to caves and little island beaches?
The other one, the Paros.
You got it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And if starting in Athens, what would be the longest ferry on this itinerary and how many hours would it take you?
Athens to Mykonos, 5 hours for the slow ferry, 2.5 or 3 hours for the fast ferry.
That is correct, my friend.
All right. Hey, I think I got at least four correct.
You did good. We have a few listener comments.
Okay.
That we're going to have to dive into.
All right.
Because
let's do it.
You're such a whiz at trivia this week. Man does better when he has a shot at Uzo and rides a boat. Who knows? But I'm proud of you. Yeah. Hey, guys. Do you guys have any tips for
Wait, who is this from?
The name is Lucia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a she.
Mm-hmm.
Lucia Borovic from Zagreb, Croatia.
Mm-hmm.
Wants to know, do we have any tips for motorbike traveling?
Any tips for motorbike traveling?
Yeah.
I don't ride motorbikes, so I don't have any tips.
I don't, only from hearsay. I do know people that have traveled to Vietnam, and the tip is that you buy the bike either in Hanoi or in I like to say Saigon, but Ho Chi Minh,
mm-hmm.
whether you're going from north to south or south to north, and then you can sell it back in the city that you end your destination with. Always kind of be aware of like where, like within little towns that are going to have fuel, so you can fuel and not run out of gas with your bike while traveling this way. Be aware of changing conditions, muddy roads, potholes and stuff, you know.
Right.
So that's obviously kind of something anybody would think about. But I think the big tip is that you don't always have to bring a bike back if you buy one, as opposed to renting it from like a tourist, like we're renting bikes for you to go travel our country in kind of thing. Some cases you can sell those bikes to a different retailer or to just a different motorcycle buyer and stuff. And quite common in Asia, Indonesia as well. This is quite common.
Okay.
So that's the biggest tip I have on that question.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the next one.
Greg Morris from Chico, California. Hey, Joseph and Tyson. Recently in my travels, I've noticed that my urge to use my phone has become less and less. Example, offline maps, no SIM card, and just my camera. What are your guys' thoughts on getting off the grid and throwing your tech devices away while traveling?
I think that there's a certain magic of traveling that's lost by using your device too much, because it's so easy to find a map, to find a place. You kind of take away this sense of discovery. And so I'm all for like the idea of just exploring or putting your device away. And like, if you're going to use it, only use it when you absolutely need to find something. But otherwise, like, you know, try like, like if you're not used to it, maybe just like try it for a couple hours. Just go outside, walk around in one direction, and really just kind of like listen to your intuition, where you want to go, and do some exploring like that. I think it's a really great way to do it. And if you're going to do like a full trip off grid, you know, like people used to travel, they used to just go to a country or a city and they would show up and they'd find a place to stay. And, you know, if one place couldn't, you know, was full, they would go to another hotel or hostel and, you know, figure it out. And I think there's this, type of spontaneity that is, you can do when you're not relying on your devices so much.
Well, and to add on to what you're talking about, those forced conversations where you have to ask for directions or ask for help or ask to use somebody's phone.
Yeah.
Are really, really quite important, because that's still, technology hasn't helped us bridge the gap of cultural differences. I think it's made them worse in some ways. We feel like we understand a lot more about what goes on culturally with different people in different parts of the world. But our ability to communicate and actually learn from one another is becoming kind of a lost art. So I commemorate you, Greg, and Chico, for you, probably noticing that as well within yourself, that the human connection is more valuable than having information faster.
Yeah.
And it always will be, in my opinion. So, you know, I have to give a lot of props to that.
There's just something more satisfying too when you find like a restaurant, for example, that you like, that you just happened upon, like you find that little hole in the wall and it's like one of the most delicious meals that you've had.
Right. Cause some local on the street told you to go there or whatever.
And you had to walk down like this one side street to find it. And it's like, you feel like you discovered it. And if you used, like, typically what we do nowadays is we open up Google Maps and we search for like best XYZ restaurant, and all of these little places will pop up and we'll be like, oh, this one has good ratings. And then you go, you know, it's like, it's different than just like, I'm going to just go walk around and I find this one place. And it's like, you feel like you really found it. You discovered it.
Right. Because just because a place has like, let's say 50 great reviews.
Yeah.
How many of those are actually local people?
Yeah.
Giving those reviews also, you know, because you can have 50 tourists giving a stand up opinion about a shop or a cafe or something, but in reality, you know, like it has no history with the local people. It's just what the tourists think.
Yeah.
So there's a lot on why I feel like forcing yourself to talk to people while traveling is such an important lesson, because you never know what kind of information and what kind of things you're going to learn from that experience.
Definitely. Okay, I think we have time for one more question.
Okay, let's see. One of them's about like girls partying in Belgrade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you want to take that question.
You know, I don't know if I'll be able to answer it, but you can ask it.
One's about somebody that got lost.
Mm-hmm.
I'll take Toby Marmbuba.
Mm-hmm.
Marmbuba from Nairobi.
Okay.
Toby from Nairobi's question is, so funny story, I took a funicular in Switzerland to an alpine mountain and walked around, had a coffee and croissant, returned and the funicular was closed. So I had to hitchhike back to the village.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys ever gone stuck in this way?
I can't say that I've gotten stuck. There's definitely been situations where I was a little bit anxious about having transportation.
Right.
You
never got stuck someplace where something closed and yeah. You couldn't get back.
I don't know if that's happened to me before. I think, and in the sense of like, there was no like easy alternative, you know, like having to hitchhike, for example.
Right.
Doesn't, you know, it's not like there's like an alternative, like if, you know, if there's no bus or anything else that, or taxi, it's like you have to like rely on other people. I think the time that kind of, I can sort of relate to that is staying in Shanghai. Which you would think like, oh, Shanghai, it's a big city. It has all these transport connections.
Right.
But my very lovely, wonderful, smart self back then was like, I'm going to book a hotel near the airport. But the hotel that I booked wasn't really like along like a metro line or anything. It was kind of like in this weird industrial area.
Oh, no.
And it didn't have any connection to like anything. It didn't have right. like a bus that I could go catch to a metro station or anything like that. They had a hotel shuttle that went to the airport, but being, I was only in Shanghai for like 24 hours or 72 hours. I was like, it wasn't that long. So I didn't really like know how to figure all this stuff out at first. And I, so I would take a taxi from the airport to the, hotel. So what I would do is I would go to the airport, take the metro into the city, come back, take a taxi to the hotel. It was like a complicated trip. And the taxi drivers, I noticed the first time I took a taxi to the hotel, he was a little bit confused. You know, he was like, oh, right. I don't know, like where it's like, I could kind of tell he was trying to figure out like what this hotel was. But he did, you know, take me to the right place. But I think it was the last night I took a taxi. And the taxi driver, I think, just thought it was a different place, like a different hotel or something. He just starts booking it down the freeway.
Uh-huh.
And he gets, you know, like, they're, like, the other ones, like, I think two other taxi drivers, like, kind of took me in different routes, but they eventually got to the hotel. This guy, like, just, you know, books it straight, doesn't take the turn off that the other taxi driver took the day before. And he just keeps going and going to finally to the point where I'm like, I need to get this guy's attention. Cause I'm like, I think, cause I was like, you know,
you're like, I'm probably going to be in a Chinese village and no longer in Shanghai by the time this guy is like,
yeah,
gives up and like, or is this like a money scheme? Like he's right. just driving me around the city for 4 hours. So
oh man, I don't know. Yeah. He's
crazy.
He's just booking it. Fare. So I'm like, you're going the wrong way. You know, I'm trying to get his attention, but it's like, he doesn't speak English. I don't speak Mandarin, so right. it's just this like where I'm trying to get his attention and I'm like, you're going the wrong way, and then like this is like I just started saying the name of the airport and I was like, take me back, and he was like, he wasn't having it, and I was like, so I showed him a map
right.
and I'm like, we're, because for some reason like I didn't have internet service or anything, but my GPS was working on Google Maps, like thank goodness, you know, because yeah. I don't know how else I would have gotten him to understand that we're going the wrong way.
Yeah.
I showed him a map and I was like, here's us. Yeah. Here's the hotel. Yeah. And it's like, we're going like slowly farther and farther away.
Right. And he finally and is so like, oh. He,
I see this like expression on his face, like other, like either like he was like found out or like he messed up or something. Like just this like flash, you know, reaction on his face. And then he goes back to being stoic and he's like, okay. And then he like, he took the next exit and turned around and brought me back to the hotel.
Right.
And then the thing that was like even more upsetting is that we're back at the hotel and he's like, I can't pay you this amount. I'm not paying you the full price that is on the meter,
right?
Because you screwed me over. And so then we're like, arguing about it. Yeah, I'm like, this much. And he's like, no, this much. And I'm like, and then I gave him a little bit more, this much. And he's like, no, this, he kept pointing out the receipt.
Oh, God.
And I was just like, I only got, because I was there for such a short time, because it was like a transit. And it's like, there was this like policy in China where people who are transiting through Shanghai could get visa free access to Shanghai.
Okay.
So that's why I was kind of like taking advantage of this like policy that China had, just to like see Shanghai. And so I only got enough cash for the time that I was there. Like, I was very specific about, I'm getting this much cash. I'm going to be here for this many days. It should be enough to cover me, which it would have been if it wasn't for this expensive taxi ride.
Yeah.
I had to give him the amount that was on the bill was exactly the amount of cash that I had for the rest of my stay.
Right.
And this was like the night before. Luckily, there was a free shuttle to the airport from the hotel.
Yeah.
So I didn't have to rely on a taxi.
But you didn't have anything.
But then I didn't have any cash after that.
Yeah. And then you're like, dude, I'm stressed out. I want to have some, like, my last Chinese meal or whatever.
So anyway, long story short, because we're out of time, but yeah, I paid him the money and went to bed. But that was my. It's like,
so as you can hear, Toby, it's happened to Joseph in a different way, but in a similar way. But like, getting stuck in a hotel instead, not on the top of some alpine village in Switzerland, but in some Chinese hotel.
Yeah.
Similar experience.
In the biggest city in China, and it's like but it's in an area that was not accessible. But anyway, we are out of time, so I just want to say thank you all. This was a lovely, lovely episode, Tyson.
Yeah, thank you, Joseph. It was a lovely episode on your part as well.
All right. Well, until next time, see you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, see you in 2 weeks.
You have been listening to Life Stamps, stories from here and there on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. Join us in 2 weeks for our next episode. Until next time, happy traveling.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
It's time to make your voice heard and your impact matter. Join us for our KBOO Out Loud Fall Membership Drive and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give.